From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Friday, June 3rd, 2016. That's right, you have made it. The weekend is just about upon us, and we have a ton of sports talk for you throughout this hour. So honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. On today's show, we will recap last night's NBA Finals Game 1 between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. We will invite Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for Advance Ohio, Cleveland.com, and host at 92.3 The Fan. Chris was in the house at Oracle Arena last night and was in the locker room conducting interviews with the players and other personnel to file reports on deadline. Chris, we'll talk about what exactly went wrong last night for LeBron James and the Cavs, and what is the overall mood in the city of Cleveland, Ohio, this Friday morning. We'll also talk about the Detroit Tigers, who tried to make a huge comeback last night against the New York Yankees in a makeup game, but fell short in an odd way. We'll recap that game. Also on the back end of the show, FIFA in hot water once again, and that name, Sepp Blatter, yes, his name surfaces yet again in another quote-unquote scandal, all right? And we'll wrap up the show with Reflection Friday, as well as take your calls throughout this 60 minutes, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. As we usually do, we get this party started with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, a bit of salty news for Michigan State football fans out there. Fans can still get season tickets for MSU football games this fall. They just won't include the October 29th matchup against rival Michigan. That's right, the full 7-game package has sold out of Michigan tickets, though packages including the remaining 6 games are still available. Michigan receives 5,000 tickets from Michigan State for the game, about double that of most opponents, and Michigan State holds back extra tickets for special events, hospitality, and recruiting. Now, Ohio State also gets 5,000 tickets as a visitor, though there aren't as many internal commitments for that game. MSU Executive Associate AD Paul Shager made that comment. All right, the weather away from Alumni Field has not been kind to the Michigan softball team this postseason, as they did in University Park at Penn State during the Big Ten tournament. The second-ranked Wolverines faced another rain delay last night at the Women's College World Series. This time, though, the game was postponed to the next day. Michigan's game against number 10 LSU, initially scheduled for 9:30 Eastern Standard Time last night, will be played 9:30 tonight at ASA Hall of Fame Stadium, OGE Energy Field. The New York Yankees used a 4-run 7th inning to beat the Detroit Tigers 5-4 in a matchup in which was a makeup game on Thursday night at Comerica Park. The Yanks' 4-run 7th inning spoiled what was a strong outing by Tigers starter Matt Boyd, who carried a no-hitter into the 6th inning. Michael Pineda, who entered owning the highest ERA of any qualified starting pitcher in the majors, allowed 1 run and what was arguably his best start of the season. Pineda was lights out last night. The Tigers begin a 3-game series at home against the Chicago White Sox today. That's right, it is the first meeting between the two American League Central rivals this year. Jordan Zimmermann will make his first start since straining his right groin on May 22nd. The Detroit Grand Prix will take place this weekend in downtown Detroit at Belle Isle. Comerica Bank free pre-day gate admission today is totally free of charge. Open seating in all grandstands except for the top 3 rows of cars.com grandstand 1. Free access to the 5th, 3rd bank paddock. So that should be a fun time. Again, the Detroit Grand Prix opening starting today. Former MSU Hoop star Draymond Green had 16 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. Sean Livingston scored a personal postseason best of 20 points. And Golden State's bench came up huge as the Golden State Warriors beat LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers 104-89 on Thursday night to move 3 wins away from a repeat title. The Splash Brothers of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, just 20 points, on 8-for-27 shooting, each knocking down a late three-pointer. Golden State's bench outscored the Cavs reserves 45-10 in the opener of this finals rematch. Game 2 will take place on Sunday night at 8 p.m. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said he would use his bully pulpit. Yeah, I don't know what that is, but all right. He will try to force through reform to eliminate the intentional fouling of poor free throw shooters, also known as the Hack-a-Shaq strategy. The NBA Competition Committee can recommend rule changes this summer, but it must pass a 2/3 majority vote of owners. So we'll see how that pans out this offseason. And sad news here, Vanderbilt freshman pitcher Donnie Everett passed away last night in a drowning accident. A spokesperson at the Coffee County Sheriff's Department confirmed that news today. He was just 19 years old. According to the Coffee County, Tennessee Sheriff's Department, dispatchers sent a deputy and an ambulance to Normandy Lake just before 5 p.m. Thursday after receiving reports of a subject that had gone underwater. Coach Tim Corbin told players and coaches of Everett's death last night, according to the Tennessean. Donnie Everett dead at the age of 19. Rest in peace, young man. Wow. And last but not least, FIFA lawyers say former top officials Sepp Blatter, Jerome Valcke, and Marcus Kattner awarded themselves pay raises and World Cup bonuses totaling, get this, $80 million over 5 years. FIFA says the contracted payments appear to break Swiss law, and evidence will be given to American and Swiss federal prosecutors who are investigating corruption implicating world football's governing body. We'll have more on that story and so much more throughout this hour. Call in to be a part of today's current sports, folks. You know that number. You have it on speed dial, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show.
You went on a 21-4 run with 17 of those coming from your bench. What was your second unit able to take advantage of there?
Just being aggressive. It's what we did all year. You know, Andre was great. Barbosa was great tonight. And, you know, we just feed off of each other and we just play well.
You got to your game a career high in the playoffs for you. What specifically was working?
The mid-range jumper, bread and butter, but just trusting my game, being aggressive, and just having confidence.
How significant is the defense you're getting from Andre Iguodala on LeBron James?
Kevin Durant last series, LeBron this series. I mean, you know, it just about says it all. I mean, he's our most valuable piece, I think, on this team with Steph and Draymond.
Seven double-digit scorers, including three off the bench. You can't look anywhere in this arena, Sean, without seeing the strength in numbers. How does this group embody that slogan?
Yeah, that's our motto. That's what we believe in. We pick each other up, and we believe in each other, and we just fight.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome to WKER's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Friday. The birds are chirping. The grass is green. And you should be in a good mood, folks, because the weekend is near. It is a beautiful afternoon here in mid-Michigan. And again, we are so glad you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of it. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Of course, we kicked this party off by recapping what took place last night out in Oakland, California at Oracle Arena, as the Golden State Warriors are now just three games away from accomplishing a feat that is oh so difficult to do in any major sport. And that is to repeat as a world champion. Man, that was really tough to watch, though, down the stretch. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they started off great. Then you see the incredible bench production from the Golden State Warriors enact its will on that game. And then Cleveland comes back, and they even take a lead in that second half. And then the Warriors just walked away with the folks. Just completely just stunned the Cavaliers. The final of last night, 104-89, and what's so glaring about this game that everyone seems to be bringing up, of course, because it is surprising. No one expected this to happen. Steph Curry, your league MVP for back-to-back years. And Klay Thompson, the best shooting backcourt in the NBA. In my opinion, the best shooting backcourt in NBA history. They weren't great, folks. They did not have great games. Curry had 11 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds. Didn't see that coming. And Klay Thompson, a man who can light it up from anywhere on the court as well, only had 9 points. That's it. That is it. The two combined, Curry and Thompson, they combined shot 8 for 27. That is horrible. If you would have told me, if you would have told anybody before that game last night that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were going to shoot a horrid 8 for 27 from the floor, I would have said the Cavs win. I would have said the Cavs not only win, but they win pretty easily by double digits at least. But that Golden State motto this year rain oh so true last night. Strength in numbers. You know that old saying, it takes a village to raise a child? Well, I always put a spin on it and say that it takes a village to raise a championship trophy, okay? You just can't do it alone. It takes a stellar supporting cast, and that's exactly what happened last night. Looking at the bench production, Golden State's bench outscored Cleveland's 45-10. 45-10, folks. That's glaring. That's glaring, folks. So now moving on. Golden State, they have a 1-0 series lead. And I must say that when you evaluate the struggles of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson last night, I for the most part, thought that Cleveland did a remarkable job guarding those two players. But this is the thing, and this is what makes it so hard to knock off the Golden State Warriors. If you take one or two pieces away, they still have six other guys that can step up and really play well. They're so deep. And you have to be if you want to win an NBA championship. Fellow reserves, Leandro Barbosa and Andre Iguodala. They were great last night. Barbosa returned from minor back injury to shoot 5 for 5 on the way to 11 points. While 2015 Finals MVP, Andre Iguodala, did a great job defensively on LeBron James while also impacting the game in multiple areas offensively. Iguodala finished with 12 points, 7 boards, and 6 assists. Great defense on LeBron James, I must say. And that was one of my big keys coming into this series, watching a rematch of the Iguodala and James matchup. What's so different about last year, when again, this is a small sample size. I want to remind people that as well. It's just game one, okay? So this is a very small sample size to try and compare this 2016 NBA Finals series between the Cavs and Warriors to that of last year's. We have an entire body of work to look at last year, okay? 6 games, a 4-2 series win for Golden State last season. But when you look at, you know, this defensive matchup and tit-for-tat matchup between LeBron James and Andre Iguodala, last year, Iguodala did a fantastic job against LeBron James, I thought, but LeBron James was still so aggressive that he was able to put up crazy numbers to combat that. So there were possessions where Iguodala would play great defense on James, and there were possessions where you just couldn't do anything with him. He was a freight train. He had that eye of the tiger last year, and for the most part, he had that because he was forced to. He didn't have really any help. He didn't have his two main guys, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Overall, Andre Iguodala did a great job against LeBron. LeBron James shot a horrid 9 of 21 from the field. He was 2 of 4 from three-point range. And I have a question. What in the world has gone awry with LeBron James' outside shot? I mean, he is shooting horrible this season, folks. It's not great. It's not pretty watching LeBron James shoot the basketball from the perimeter. So much so that I think maybe his psyche has been hit a little bit. He doesn't even take many outside jumpers anymore. He doesn't take many three-point shots throughout the course of a game. Now, it's a catch-22 because I've always criticized LeBron James and said that, hey, this dude is way too big. Just be camping out on the perimeter when he's got a smaller guy guarding him, which is 80 to 90% of any given night in the NBA, take him to the paint and simply abuse him. And that's the mentality LeBron James had early on in that game, which I absolutely love. But as that game went on, you make adjustments. Steve Kerr threw a lot of white jerseys on LeBron James anytime he drove, anytime he was in the paint, anytime he thought about going to the paint. There was help. There was help there. And LeBron James did miss a lot of easy buckets down there as well. He didn't help himself. But LeBron James is barely taking any outside shots now. It's like he's afraid to. I don't know what it is. He's not shooting well from the perimeter, folks. And at the free throw line, oh, don't even get me started on when it comes to his free throw line production. He shot, I believe, like a measly 70% during the regular season. He's shooting somewhere in the 60s. For the postseason when it comes to free throws. So I don't know. LeBron James' shot is a mystery right now. But in a way, you have to like it if you're a Cleveland fan from this perspective, looking at the glasses half full, because LeBron James is going to be in attack mode all the time. And I think LeBron James is at his best when he is in attack mode and is posting up guys and taking it to the hole. I think that's where he's at his best, because there are very few guys that are his size that can handle the ball like he does, and there's very few guys that can guard that amount of mass in the paint that play his position. So it's a catch-22 there, but you can't shoot 9 for 21, all right? He finished with 23 points. Kevin Love, I will say, Kevin Love had a nice debut in this series. I must say that. I thought he made an impressive finals debut with 17 points, 13 rebounds, after missing last year's run, of course, with that dislocated shoulder that did require surgery. But overall, cold shooting for Cleveland, 38.1% from the floor. And Kyrie Irving is the other piece to this Cleveland Cavaliers puzzle. He didn't play well. Again, he was lost to a devastating knee injury in game one, an overtime game last year. 26 points, 11 of those, though, on free throws. Kyrie Irving did not shoot well from the floor. Get this. He was even worse than LeBron. 9 of 22. 9 of 22 from the floor for Kyrie Irving. He was 11 of 12 from the free throw line. You can't do that. You can't do that against this team. Golden State is going to beat you every single time. And I feel at times that, and you can look at this two ways as well, because LeBron James certainly has help now with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and the other supporting cast, guys like J.R. Smith. J.R. actually went out early in that game last night. An odd game for him because there was a moment where he dove on the floor. He had floor burn. He had to go off the court for a little bit. He was never able to get into any sort of rhythm. I mean, he only took three shots. J.R. Smith only taking three shots? That doesn't happen. That simply doesn't happen. He finished with 3 points. That's just an odd game for Mr. J.R. Smith. But, you know, LeBron certainly has more help this year. And that's sort of the theme for the Cavaliers in this series, right? LeBron James has help this year. Let's see what Cleveland does. They have a better chance this year, right? But I feel as though when LeBron saw how bad his team was shooting from the floor, that there has to come a moment, you being LeBron James, you being the stellar player that you are, there has to come a moment where you just simply take over. You say, give me the basketball, I'm going to make something happen. In the waning moments of that game in the fourth quarter, there were multiple times where LeBron James deferred to his teammates rather than trying to just stay aggressive and get something going. And that's the thing I always say with LeBron. LeBron, you have to learn when to take over games. Simple as that, brother. And to put the Cavs' struggles in perspective, the Cavs, who are allowing 94.3 points per game, dropped to 12-3 this postseason and 5-3 on the road, averaging a playoff high 14.4 threes per game. The Cavs shot 7 of 21 from behind the arc. So they were horrible from behind the arc, folks. Horrible. Strength in numbers, though. Draymond Green, 16 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. Sean Livingston was a man amongst boys. He scored a personal postseason best of 20. I love the move. Steve Kerr sticking with regular starter Harrison Barnes, as Barnes came out and actually scored 7 of the first 14 points for the Golden State Warriors last night. He finished with 13 total. And that's what they needed. Anytime you have your two superstars in Steph Curry, well, and Draymond Green, I think, is a star in his own right as well. But, you know, the Splash Brothers, when you have those guys struggling, other personnel have to step up. And that's exactly what happened. So I want to know your thoughts on this series. I chose Golden State in 6 games. Again, we're just talking about game one here. You're going to see, I think, an entirely different attitude, an entirely different team from the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're not going to shoot 38% in game two, I don't believe. It's all about adjustments in the playoffs, okay? So game one is in the books, and I'm hoping that a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers fans are not already jumping already off the bridge when it comes to this team. But we are going to invite Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for Advance Ohio or Cleveland.com and also host at 92.3 The Fan. Chris is going to join us in about 7 minutes, okay, to talk about how the city is feeling right now and what were his takeaways as he was in the house for that game one of the NBA Finals. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, to the show. Isaac, how you doing?
Good, actually. First off, I want to point off, is that Ralph Lauren that you're wearing? I wonder if we're matching. It's the same type of T-shirt. You see?
Is it?
No. With the skinny sort of sleeves that make you look bigger, more muscular. Yeah.
No, it's not Ralph Lauren. It's actually H&M. H&M is like my favorite store to go to, man. But yeah, thank you for that compliment, Isaac. But yeah, I've wear the shirts now that I just can't wear baggy shirts anymore, dude. So, but no, I don't even know what you got on, man. You're looking funky fresh as always, dude. But I got to know, Isaac, when looking at this series, man, because I just noticed this yesterday, as soon as we got off the air, that I did not get a chance to get your prediction on this series. I chose Golden State in 6. I believe we even had a caller yesterday that chose Cleveland in 5, which that's just not going to happen. Let's just be real here. Cleveland is not going to win the next four games of this series and close it out in four games. I don't see that happening at all. But what are your takeaways from this series, dude?
Yeah, so far, you know, it's not anything I didn't expect. And actually, I've got to go against you with the Cleveland criticisms. I thought Cleveland, for the most part, played fairly well. You're not going to see that sort of production from Leandro Barbosa on a daily basis. He made tough shots. He really did. And Andre Iguodala, what I want to point out, first of all, because I thought Cleveland actually would win this series in six.
That's your prediction?
That's my prediction. And I'm sticking to it after game one because, first off, it would be very fickle of me to change it after one game.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't think Cleveland can win a game seven in Oracle. But I also don't think Golden State wins this series. So, I've got to go with Cleveland in six. But anyway, so my takeaways were that Golden State's bench was simply unstoppable. I didn't think that there was much that Cleveland starters, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, I didn't think they did as much wrong as Golden State's backups did right. Defensively, the Cavaliers have been such a stout team all year long. And that held true, in my opinion, for the starters when you saw the lack of production that Klay Thompson and Steph Curry put up. 20 points combined, 10 in the first half, the lowest total of this series or this season for the two. And yeah, I just thought that Cleveland was rather impressive defensively until the fourth quarter for the most part. But that bench for the Golden State, which they don't necessarily pride themselves on, but they're so good, is what made the difference in that game. I thought there wasn't that much you could do about it. I thought it was a decent showing in game one.
Well, I'll say this to combat that argument. This is the thing with me. I thought that Cleveland, as I stated, did a great job against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. But this is the thing. I thought they were way too focused defensively on both of those players. There were multiple times where Steph Curry and Klay Thompson had the basketball around the three-point arc. And, you know, they love to run that famous pick and roll, which they can play off of. They can get a shot off of it. Or if two guys collapse on them, or if there's a trailer on the play, they can dump it down to whatever man set the pick and possibly get a shot in the paint. There were multiple times where Cleveland double-teamed way too early on Klay Thompson or Steph Curry, leaving wing players who were trailers either on the break or trailers in a half-court set, leaving guys like Harrison Barnes and Sean Livingston and even Andre Iguodala. There were multiple times where those players, and Draymond Green as well, there were multiple times where the Cleveland Cavaliers will double-team Klay or Steph, leaving someone on the wing wide open for an easy bucket or an easy look at the rim. Sometimes you can get caught up so much in the Splash Brother hype that you forget that this team has other pieces that are pretty good. So with that being said, the question that I pose is this the right strategy moving forward if you are going to beat the Golden State Warriors? Are you going to continue to double team and put an emphasis on stopping Steph and Klay and letting the bench beat you ideally, let the other guys beat you? Or do you attack it from a different mindset in game two and moving forward? Play everyone equally and hope that you still got a chance as the game winds down. I don't know. And what I will say that is, when you look at that game last night, even though there was such an emphasis on Steph and Klay, and you did allow guys like Livingston and Iguodala and Barbosa and Barnes to get off, you still had a chance to possibly win that game. Again, I stated in the second half how Cleveland came back and took the lead, and then it was just like, okay, Cleveland, the Warriors just kind of put it up to another level. You saw, actually, if you remember, Steph and Klay hit back-to-back shots when that game was really, really close in the waning moment. So, I don't know. I think Golden State, the way at the end of the day, they're so deep, they're so talented, it's going to be a tall order in order to beat this team. Now, I do love the new format, though. They've gone away from the historical format. I believe, 2-3-2 format? which was the
past. That was the old
right, and now this is the first year where they actually have a 2-2-1-1-1, which I absolutely love because it gives guys more rest. They have 2 days in between game one and two now. And if you're Cleveland, you want to get right back in the fire, you know what I mean, after losing a game like that. But at the same time, it allows you more rest, and it allows a more even playing field, if you ask me. Let's go to our phone lines right now before we hit our first break. We have Jody from Canada on line one. Jody, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, how you doing, Al? First off, man, it mismatch. You know, they're right by high-trapping Steph and them off, you know, and trying to, you know. But the thing is that when guys like Sean Livingston at 6'7" point guard, come on, man. You know, he's on Dellavedova, and Kyrie Irving can't check him. And, you know, when you go to the second unit, so his mid-range game, or all he's doing is taking the ball to the hoop on little fellas. You know, no matter how much the game changes, the game should always come back to what it is, and that's putting the ball in the basket and playing defense.
Right, exactly. And you can't shoot 38% from the floor and expect to win, Jody. You know, 38%, that's horrible.
7-for-21 from the three line. That's
right.
About what most, you know, that's a third, one out of every three. You know, the way they say, you know, with the new, you know, everybody with the mathematics and all that say that's acceptable. But, you know, it's a closer game. What happens, you can't keep shooting jump shots. You got to take the ball to the hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to, you know, and John Livingston, like he said, is mid-range game. He's 6'7", Kyrie 6'1", 5'10", Dellavedova, little fella. Just mouse in the house, shoot over him. You know, I don't see, and plus you got to remember in January, Cleveland did lose the Golden State in Cleveland by 30.
Yep, they did. They definitely did.
You know, so, you know, my thing is, you know, that's probably why they got these games so far spread out, so that, you know, this system, because maybe there'll be a 4 or 5 game series.
And, you know, and there has to come a moment for me, you know, watching that game last night, Jody, where I just thought that LeBron James, he deferred to his teammates way too much. And there was a moment, to put in perspective what I'm saying here, there was a moment last night where there was a switch and LeBron James was being guarded by, you talk about mouse in the house, he was being guarded by Steph Curry, all right? And he's backing down Curry, and I immediately said to myself, oh, LeBron James is about to take the ball right at Curry. This is a huge mismatch. But what happens? LeBron takes two dribbles, backs him down. I thought he was going to make a move. He picks up the basketball, throws it out to Tristan Thompson for a three-pointer. It clanks off the rim. Golden State gets the rebound. They're off on the other way of the floor. I don't get that sometimes with LeBron. You know, I just feel like when watching LeBron, he is too, and this is something you can't say about any other superstar that we've ever had in this game. It's a catch-22, certainly, when discussing LeBron James's legacy. He is the most unselfish superstar I have ever seen in my life, and sometimes that hurts him.
Yeah, you know, but a lot of it, too, is we're busy listening to the hype of the game as opposed to what's really been going on. You know, a lot of times you see the game and all the build-up, you know, takes over what really happens. You know, Cleveland can't run with Golden State. I don't care if LeBron came down and shot, you know, took the ball to the hole every time he got it. You know, they don't play the defense. The East wasn't as strong. You didn't go through OKC like Golden State did or San Antonio. You know, they went through Detroit. They went through Atlanta. They went through, you know, Toronto. Good teams, but not, you know, mm-hmm. We don't consider them the top three or four like we did OKC and San Antonio. So the West is a little stronger conference, you know. But Cleveland, you know, I want Cleveland to win because it's been 52 years since my home state had a, you know, had any kind of title. I mean, my brother's 52. That tells you, you know, how long it's been.
Right,
my younger brother. So, you know, as you look at it, but, you know, I don't see it. And the thing is, what happens after this season? You know, is LeBron going to get up and leave again? Or what happened? You know, because, you know, the people in Cleveland in that area, they love that boy. You know, they love LeBron. I just feel sorry that it looks like another season gone down the drain. And when my man gets on from Cleveland, hey, all he can talk about, he can talk about since 64, the drive. He can talk about the fumble. He can talk about Elo shooting the jumper. He can talk about the Indians losing in the World Series. I mean, he can start talking about it. You don't have to interview him. You can interview all those Ohio folks that live through it, too.
Since, you know? Right. It has been that long. It's been since 1964, the last time a Cleveland team captured a major championship. That is a long time, Jody.
And I watched it back in 64 with my rabbit ears at my house. I was 7 years old, you know?
The rabbit ears.
So, I mean, yeah,
throwback.
Seriously, they beat the Baltimore Colts, you know,
right,
to win the title.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
So,
man,
you know, I remember watching Jim Brown was still playing, you know, Paul Warfield. I mean, it was, you know, and I, like I say, that was, you know, my youth. But I never thought it would be that far. But my father always said something, and before he passed in the 80s, he said, and then my buddies, if you ever go to my page, you'll hear my buddies mention it, those raggedy Browns or those raggedy Cleveland. Cause that's all he ever said about Cleveland sports teams, is they were raggedy because they, you know, they couldn't win.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, he must have put the curse on him, because I called him one time. They were on their way to the Super Bowl, and I called him, and I said, "Dad, your boy's going to the Super Bowl." He said, "Jody, not yet. It's those raggedy Browns." And I'd be doggone if John Elway didn't go 90 yards down.
Oh, man. I tell you, the curse may live on. We'll see, though. We still got a lot of basketball left to play. Jody, appreciate the call, my man.
Go fishing, man. It's over, because, like I say, hey, when you go to your second unit, they bring Livingston in at 6'7". He posts up, you know, dribble into the paint, shoot over the little fella, you know. Eagle Dog, yeah, well, you know, I'm just telling y'all, that's why these games are 4 or 5 days apart. They're trying to make this mess last.
That's an interesting thought right there. Jody, appreciate
it. Think about it. They don't play again until Sunday, man. Come on.
Yep, that's true.
All right, I'll get off your phone now.
All right, Jody, I'll talk to you, my man, in just a second, folks. We'll be chatting with Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for Advance Ohio, Cleveland.com, and host at 92.3 The Fan. He'll give us a firsthand take on the mood out in Cleveland right now. You don't want to go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's get to our guest for today's show. His name is Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for Advance Ohio, Cleveland.com, and host at 92.3 The Fan. Chris joins us via line one. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Al, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Oh, I am fantastic, my man. Let's dive right into it. We've dedicated the first half of the show talking about and recapping last night's game one of the NBA Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are now just 3 games away from possibly repeating as the league's NBA champs. First off, Chris, what is the mood like in Cleveland right now? If you had to put your finger on the pulse.
I would say that a little bit of both. People concerned, obviously, after what they saw last night, Al. It wasn't the team that they had watched throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. And at the same time, you know, people are trying to put it in perspective. It's just game one. Oklahoma City got trounced by San Antonio in game one, came back to win that series. Golden State was down 3-1 against Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals, came back to win that series. Every time LeBron has lost game one in his career, he's come back to win every single game the second time that he has seen that team. So game two has gone LeBron's way. So I think a lot of people are trying to put it in perspective and not trying to overreact based on one game, knowing that the Cavs' goal going to Oakland was to get one of the two, and they still have a chance to do it.
Now, Chris, it was certainly an interesting dynamic last night, seeing as though the Splash Brothers were certainly slowed down. I want to first start with that, and I want to go on as well to the bench production that was stellar last night for the Warriors. First off, how did the Cavs go about slowing down Klay Thompson and Steph Curry?
Well, the Cavs entered the series, Al, saying that they had a plan for Steph and Klay. They understood how great they are. They understood how nobody's been able to contain those two guys, but they felt like they had a plan. And they used the same plan that the Cavs used in Game 5 against Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan against Toronto. Their goal was to trap them, take the ball out of their hands, and make them see multiple bodies repeatedly. And that worked. They went 8 of 27 combined. They scored 20 points. So that was their plan going in. Anybody else can beat us, just not Steph and Clay. The problem is the Cavs are no longer playing the Toronto Raptors. And Draymond Green is not Patrick Patterson. And Sean Livingston is not Corey Joseph. And Harrison Barnes is not Damari Carroll. So the Cavs dared everybody else on Golden State to beat them. And the Warriors obliged. And they still won by 15 because they got 45 points from their bench and because they got seven guys that scored in double figures. So the Cavs feel like they probably executed their plan on Steph and Clay, what they wanted to do. It's just the other guys beat them last night.
Now, Chris, let's say they stick with that game plan moving forward in game two, just for kicks and giggles. I know adjustments are going to be made. That's exactly what this time of the year is all about. But is last night, if they continue that game plan of trapping both Clay and Steph around the perimeter and getting the ball out of their respective hands, is last night indicative of how that Warriors bench is in supporting cast is going to play and produce all series long?
Like, Al, there's a thought in Cleveland right now that there's no possible way that Sean Livingston scores 20 again, or Draymond Green scores 16, or Leandro Barbosa does what he did last night. And there's probably some truth to that. You probably want to play the percentages, and you live with those kinds of guys beating you as opposed to Steph and Clay. At the same time, going into game two and three and four, and as this series progresses, Steph and Clay are going to get more comfortable. That's what happened against Oklahoma City. Against Oklahoma City, Steph was completely out of it. Draymond Green was completely out of it in the first few games of that series because they looked like they couldn't handle the length, the athleticism, and just the schemes that Oklahoma City was using. But as the series went on, those two guys grew more comfortable. They started to realize how they could attack that particular defense, and it led to Golden State winning three games in a row. I think Steph and Clay are going to start to figure out the Cavs' plan. They're going to figure out the best way to attack it. They're going to make adjustments as well. But to answer your question, I mean, look, Golden State lives by the motto of strength in numbers. It was on the T-shirts that they handed out game one. It's hanging from the rafters. That's who they are. It's not just a silly catchphrase. It's their identity. And at the core, the Warriors are much more than just a two-man show of Steph and Clay. It's been about a team effort. It's been about sharing the basketball. It's been about a bunch of different guys stepping up when their number is called. And to ask that kind of team to do those kinds of things, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for their others to play as well as they did last night because they've done it all season long.
Certainly. And Chris, you know, looking at the supporting cast of LeBron James, the big storyline for Cleveland entering this final series this year is that LeBron now has some help as opposed to last year. He's got Kevin Love. He's got Kyrie Irving. Kyrie, he had 26 points, 11 of those on free throws, though. He didn't shoot well from the floor. Kevin Love, though, thought he had an impressive finals debut. 17 points, 13 rebounds, kind of disappeared as that game went on. What's your evaluation of what you saw from those two in that game one?
I was more impressed with Kevin, Al, because I thought coming into the series, one of the biggest questions that I had is, would Kevin give the Cavs enough offensively and in terms of rebounding to make up for what he was going to give up on the defensive end of the floor? Mm-hmm. Because he was going to be one of the guys that Golden State tried to attack defensively, and Kyrie Irving was going to be the other one. I thought Kevin fought. I thought he was aggressive. I thought he played a physical game. I thought he held his own on defense as best as he can, even though he is, at his core, a defensive liability at times. And I thought he gave the Cavs enough offensively and enough from a rebounding standpoint to justify the minutes that he played. And he showed that he was going to be an important member of this team in this particular series, something that I wondered would be the case because of his defense. So I liked the way that he played, and I think that was a positive for the Cavs to take away from that game. As for Kyrie, look, he's one of the best one-on-one players in the NBA, Al. He has been for a very, very long time. But the problem is sometimes his ability to go one-on-one is not always what's best for the Cavs. And I just don't think his style, what he did last night, trying to search for his shot attack Golden State's defense one-on-one, I just don't think that's going to work in a seven-game series against one of the most underrated defensive teams in the NBA, against a defense that the Cavs have not scored 100 points against in three straight games. Isolation ball, one-on-one attacks, it's not going to work against Golden State. And I think Kyrie fell into some bad habits last night, and the Cavs' offense fell into some bad habits last night because the pressure was on them in a way that they didn't feel against Toronto, Atlanta, and Detroit. And that's going to have to change moving forward, especially with Kyrie. He's got to share the basketball. It's got to be a team approach. It can't be the Uncle Drew one-on-one stuff. It's just not going to do it.
That's so true. I totally agree with you, Chris. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for Advance Ohio, Cleveland.com, and host at 92.3 The Fan. Now, Chris, I want to now focus on LeBron James for a second here. The legacy of LeBron James in Cleveland. We all know that it's an interesting one that goes back to, of course, the whole decision to go to Miami and the whole concert that was thrown. A lot of Cleveland fans felt as though they were slighted by that decision. But then LeBron comes back. He wants to deliver a championship to this city. It's been a long time since this city has won a major championship. What do you think the legacy of LeBron James in Cleveland will be if he does not get the job done this year?
Well, if he doesn't get it done this year, I don't think it's going to affect his legacy that much. If he just doesn't win a championship for Cleveland, if he doesn't end the drought, I think that's something that's always going to be an emptiness on his resume. Look, when he came into the NBA, Al, in 2003, he made a promise to deliver a title to Cleveland. And he just hasn't delivered on that promise. And one of the reasons why he came back, yes, there were basketball reasons. Yes, there were emotional reasons. Yes, there were family reasons. But one of the reasons why he came back is that one of his number one goals in the NBA before he retires is to win a championship for Cleveland. And he hasn't done that yet. He still has a chance to do it here in the series against Golden State. It would require the Cavs playing much, much better than they did in game one. But if he doesn't win one this year, then you hope that he gets it done next year or the year after. I mean, the core of this team is in place. The main roster that the Cavs have, they have the hardest part already with the big three of LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving. So the thought is, given the way that the Eastern Conference is set up and that there's no team that can stop the Cavs in the East, apparently, the thought would be that the Cavs would be back in this position next year in the NBA Finals with another chance to win a championship. But I just think it's a little bit hard to say that this particular series against Golden State would affect his legacy that much. Yes, the Cavs are healthier. Yes, this is probably the best team that LeBron has had since he left Miami. But I think LeBron's playing against the best team that he's ever seen in the NBA Finals. So to ask him or to say that kind of series against that team is going to affect his legacy that much, I think that's going a little bit overboard. He's the underdog, again, in this series. So I think you have to look beyond 2-4 as a record in the NBA Finals and what could potentially be 2-5 and just understand what teams he was up against. I think the one that affects his legacy the most, Al, to be honest with you, is him losing the NBA Finals against the Dallas Mavericks, because the Miami Heat had no business losing that Finals, and LeBron was at the center of them losing.
And he did not show up at all in that series.
Right.
That was a bad look for LeBron James, without a doubt. And Chris, I want to know, how much do you read into the rumor mill? Because it seems like every time I turn on sports talk radio and I hear these national pundits talk about LeBron James in this series, I've heard a few times that, you know, there's a chance that LeBron, that from anonymous sources, of course, that LeBron James is thinking about going to, you know, somewhere else to play, linking up, maybe going back to Miami, linking up and playing with his best bud, Dwayne Wade. How much do you read into all that jazz?
Very little. The thing that I would say to anybody that's saying that, Al, is you tell me right now where LeBron could go and have a better chance of winning a championship than right here in Cleveland, where he's playing alongside Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and he's got a supporting cast of J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, all of those other guys. Find me another team that is better set to make a championship run. And I think it would be a little bit reactionary of LeBron and reactionary of the Cavs to make any kind of big moves after losing to the Golden State Warriors if the Cavs do lose to the Warriors in this series. And again, I still think the Cavs have a chance to win this thing. But I mean, look who they're playing. It's the 73-win Warriors. It's a team that head coach Greg Popovich, the greatest head coach in the NBA, Al, called unsolvable.
Right.
That's not just him being flippant. That's him saying, wow, this team is really, really good. They're the most unique team. They're the most versatile team. They're the most talented team in the NBA. And by the way, they have a two-time MVP, the first ever unanimous MVP. So to make any decision on where he's going to play basketball based on a loss to that team, I think that would be very, very silly for LeBron. And I think he would understand that it's probably not the best move for his career if he's all about chasing championships, and he is all about chasing championships. Where's he going to go? There's nowhere else that's better set than Cleveland.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland Cavaliers beat reporter for AdvanceOhioCleveland.com and host at 92.3 The Fan. Chris, before we get you out of here, my man, I know you're a very busy man, with, of course, covering the NBA Finals right now, but I got to ask you this. Do you think that Tyronn Lue is the right man for the job?
Well, I do, from the standpoint that everybody I talk to around the NBA, Al, players, coaches, executives, they feel like he's got the kind of personality where he can get through to players. And I think beyond an X's and O's standpoint, that's the most important thing that a coach has to do. You have to be able to manage personality. You have to be able to communicate in a way that guys are going to follow. And you have to find a way to get your players to trust and believe in you. That was the failure of David Blatt when he was here with the Cavs. It's something that Ty has worked very hard on, and he has gotten the trust and the belief of his players. And I think he has the personality to do that. And I think every time he has sent a message to LeBron or Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving, the Cavs have responded to that. They haven't just said that, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Ty. They've gone out and they've done the things that Ty has asked of them. So I think from that standpoint, yes, he can be a successful head coach, because I think that's a huge part of being a successful head coach. There are some X's and O's things that he has to get better at. There are some rotation things that he has to get better at. I didn't think he handled himself very well in game one last night, but It was his first ever time as a head coach in the NBA Finals going up against the coach of the year. So those things are going to happen. But to answer your question, given the fact that he's been groomed by Doc Rivers, he has played with Michael Jordan, he's been coached by Phil Jackson, and he has found a way to get through to his players here in Cleveland, I think he does have the ability to be a very good head coach in the NBA.
All right, Chris, I got to put you on the spot, my man. Can you give us a finals prediction? How do you think this series is going to pan out, and how many games? And also, how can people read your outstanding work, my friend?
Oh, no. You're putting me on the spot like that, Al. My goodness. I've already become public enemy number one in Cleveland.
Right, man. Exactly, right? I'm sorry, dude.
Before the series, Al, and before the playoffs, I had the same thing. I had the Warriors in seven. I think they're the superior team. I think they have more counters for some of the stuff that the Cavs have done or are going to try and do against them. And as Greg Popovich said, I think they're unsolvable. I don't know what the Cavs can do to beat the Warriors four times out of seven. I just think they have too many answers, and I think they have too much versatility. It's going to require, as the Cavs have admitted to my partner Chris Haynes at Cleveland.com, They have to play nearly perfect to beat the Warriors because of the team that they're up against. So before the series, I had Golden State in seven. I'm not going to change that based on one game. But the Cavs, it looks a lot like last year's finals, and it looks a lot like the two regular season meetings. The Cavs are going to have to play much, much better. But I think at some point you run out of answers for what a team has against you. And I just don't know that the Cavs will have enough answers against this Golden State team that is a complete and utter matchup problem for 29 other teams in the NBA.
So true. How can people catch your work, Chris?
Oh, you can check it out, Cleveland.com. All my stuff is going to be there. I've got stuff before the game, after the game. And, of course, you can listen to me on 92.3 The Fan FM here in Cleveland. I'm on mostly weekends while the Cavs are playing, and they've got this rigorous schedule. But I'm on all the time over there at 92.3 The Fan.
The one, the only Chris Fedor. Chris, thanks so much for your time. We'll be in touch, all right?
Al, sounds good. Anytime, buddy.
All right. Man, that was fantastic stuff. All right, 5 minutes left in the show. Let's hit a quick first break. We'll come back and put a bow on today's current sports and this week on current sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have just 4 minutes left here in the show, and you guys know how we close out each and every week here on Current Sports. We love to reflect a bit. We dub it Reflection Friday, where we take a look at the week that was here on our airwaves and beyond and hit you with some of our favorite moments. Here we go. All right, let's reflect a bit, shall we? First off, I have to reflect a bit on the Detroit Tigers. It's been just an ugly stretch of baseball for this team. With the loss last night to the New York Yankees, they have now lost 5 of their last 6 games. Yes, dating back to May 28th, second game of a 3-game set against the Oakland A's. And the last game they won was actually on June 1st. So 2 days ago against the Anaheim Angels, they closed out that 3-game set with a win after previously losing the first 2. Interesting game last night, though. The Tigers were down 5-1 and then tried to rally late in that game, scoring a run off of Dellin Betanis in the 7th inning. Then they added another run off of Andrew Miller in the 8th and scored a run in the 9th off of closer and Aroldis Chapman. Then, you know, everything just went awry. Miguel Cabrera, he has the tying run on 3rd. Miguel Cabrera's at the plate, and things didn't pan out. Miguel actually hits into a double play, kaput. So, tough outing for the Tigers. Also, troubling news in the world of FIFA concerning, yes, Sepp Blatter yet again, and Jerome Valky and Marcus Kattner. It's being reported that they awarded themselves pay raises and World Cup bonuses totaling $80 million over their last 5 years in office. Crazy stuff. And one birthday shout-out, Isaac. I want to give a shout-out to Jessica Sloan. It is her birthday today. You know who Jess is. Very dear to my heart. So happy birthday, Jess. Love you,
yes,
girl.
Yes, happy birthday, Jess. And my reflection would actually just be back to the game I had other ones planned. But I've got to say, in LeBron's defense, too, Golden State played great defense on him last night. Not only Andre Iguodala, but the way they hedge halfway in between the man they're guarding and LeBron when he goes into the post, it's fantastic. Also, Leandro Barbosa and so many hard shots, and the player not getting his fair share of criticism, J.R. Smith. 1 of 3 last night. How do you take 3 shots as J.R. Smith?
That floor burn must have been pretty bad, huh?
Must have.
All right, folks, we'll be back at the same time, same place on Monday. Have a fantastic weekend. Thanks so much to Chris Fedor for joining me on today's show and all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.